This is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick at rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of Florida Spectacular. How you doing, Rick? Is it still as warm in Orlando as it is over here on the coast?
You know, we had a massive rainstorm last night, and there's branches and debris all over the road, and it kind of cooled it off a bit. And so I'm grateful for it. It was on the weekend, we were getting to the point where it hadn't rained in a couple of days. The grass was getting crunchy. And
crunchy.
So, yeah, since then, we've had two big rains, and you know, of course, it's still humid as all get out, but it helped a lot.
Yeah, it needs to rain more here. It's not raining enough. And I'll tell you, I don't know if it's related. A lot of us have been complaining of sinus things. And I think it's because there's just stuff on the ground that needs to be gone. Too much rain, you know, it's a knife's edge. But anyway, speaking of water, would you like to introduce our guest to the listeners?
Well, in my world, our guest today is a legend. And I just opened his Facebook page. He's a fellow Gainesville High School graduate. Go Canes.
Oh, you guys are rabid.
I didn't know that, Rick.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Purple Hurricanes.
Yay.
So I met Lars at an event at High Springs at the Great Outdoors Restaurant years ago, and I have his book on Payne's Prairie, which is amazing. I utilized it. I did a talk at the Cade Museum for a water event, and I wanted to talk kind of about my home waters and the Hogtown Creek and things like waters I grew up with around Gainesville. And Payne's Prairie is a big part of that whole water system. And I used his book, and it was incredible. It's so well written. And Lars is just, you know, he takes people on trips and is a font of knowledge about history and nature. Where are you based out? Are you in Gainesville, Lars?
I'm up near the Chittenden River.
Okay, by Fort White, yeah. That area?
Yeah. We were based in High Springs for about 20 years, but for the past 8 years, we closed the store and now just working out of the Chittenden area, the property up there.
So what do you spend most of your time giving tours or how, like, what's an average day like?
Yeah. I do two or three tours a week, a little bit less in the summer. There's plenty of demand for it, but just with this heat, it's a bit brutal for me. So a couple a week, I do over 60 different waterways all over North Florida. But just everything within a couple hours of Gainesville. A real hub of our clientele is Gainesville, but we have a lot of people come from Jacksonville and Tallahassee and Orlando. Some from Tampa area. Yesterday's group was all from the Tampa area.
So mostly, what do you consider, like, you know, Suwannee, Santa Fe? Other water do you cover?
Yeah, pretty much everything within a couple hours of Gainesville. So yesterday we're on the Suwannee. But we do things as far south as like Rock Springs Run in Wakaiva down by Orlando. And over to the coast of St. Augustine, do some of the waterways over that way. And Akawaha with the Coochies, you know, all of those. And some smaller ones, too. Little backwaters are always kind of nice to go explore around in when the water levels permit.
So one of the things I've been dying to see, and I think it's off the Withlacoochee, they have a blue spring on the Withlacoochee. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep.
And you can only get there by paddling, as far as I know.
Right. You come down from that bridge and paddle down to that one.
Is that worth paddling to? Is it a long paddle? And
That's not one I do very often. It's not on one of our regular routes. We do several routes with the Withlacoochee. That is not one of them. There's a lot of residences kind of in that general area. It's a nice paddle though, but it's not one I do regularly. But people do paddle down from the bridge and get back up.
I've always wanted to see that spring since I first heard of it. And you know, there aren't, how many springs are there that you can only paddle to? I guess there's a number of them when you think about it. So how did you fall into this line of work? What's your background?
Well, it was a long and convoluted path, but basically, you know, back in the 1980s, I actually had tree service at the time, but I had this idea to write an educational tape about driving I-10 because I had to make that ride a lot. And I knew about all the nature. You know, ever since a kid, I've really been studying nature and loving that. But I just knew all these great stories along I-10 from Pensacola to Jacksonville. And just thought, God, what a shame that people driving this road blindly just don't know of all these great things going along, passing by their window. So I wrote and produced this audio tape. You know, that's how old this is, a cassette tape that you plugged into your dashboard.
Yeah.
Just hired some actors to do characters, to read the different parts, like an Indian chief and a second, a Civil War mother, and, you know, just all these characters. And wrote that, produced that, recorded a big sound studio in Dallas in 88 and produced that. And but just in the early stage of that, I did all the research, but I hired a writer to do it, and he just kept putting it off and had other projects. And finally, I just decided to try to write some of it myself and submitted it around to some friends, including writers. And they said, yes, you just need to do it yourself. This is, you know, you did fine. And just in that process, I discovered a love of writing and also rediscovered Payne's Prairie, because in my research of that tape, Payne's Prairie, which where I spent my childhood, you know, breaking my teeth on nature and learning about nature, it just kept coming up. And every story, every historical story that I read about Payne's Prairie just kind of kept popping up, but there was no book about it. And so now that I had this new love of writing and this new appreciation of Payne's Prairie as not just this great wildlife area, but now historically significant, I just began on the Payne's Prairie book pretty quickly after that tape. It didn't get published till 2001 or something like that. And but it's just kind of continued from there. And then the guiding tours is sort of like carrying that to the next level. You know, it's nice to write and put it out there, and you just kind of hope people read it. And sometimes they'll touch base with you and show some appreciation or whatever, or not, maybe. But but the tours is just for me, 28 years ago, I decided just to bring the message directly face to face to people, take them out and show them this incredible place we have. And you know, but that my idea from the beginning was to take Floridians out. And that was what was unique. And everybody thought I was kind of crazy for that, but I was not so interested in courting tourists coming in. I do a lot of that, obviously, but my main interest and the reason that I got into it was to bring Floridians onto their own waterways. And it took a few years for that to really catch on. I gave away tours, basically. I did 10 buck tours for 2 or 3 years. And I'd take 2 or 3 people out, totally losing money. But I knew the only way this idea would really catch is for people to come out and realize that they don't know their own waterways, and, you know, to really help them connect to their own land. So that's kind of a longer story than you probably want.
No, that's great. I'm dying to know if the I-10 piece that, you know, the audio piece still exists somewhere that we could listen to.
It does, you know, but it was my first writing project. It's embarrassing. You know, the first thing I ever wrote is just kind of, I'd like to rewrite it. Obviously, I think as a writer, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
So I'd love to get my hands and re-record it. But you know, on a whim, I just let people hear it once in a while, friends, and everybody seems to like it. So, I mean, I'm happy to share one with you if you'd like it.
Yeah, I think it should be online somewhere. You know, I think about, I have a friend who listens to our podcast, and he has to drive to Pensacola. Well, he had to drive to Pensacola this week. It would be great if he could listen to it while he was driving.
Yeah, that was the whole idea. So, I mean, I'm happy. I've got boxed up. So okay. Anybody that wants one, send me a note.
All right, we'll have to put a link.
Is it digital anywhere that we could link to in our show? Well,
yeah, it's not digital. They did, you know, the sound studio. I've got this big reel, you know, just, you know, 1.5-foot-wide reel, old school, like recording studio thing. And so they worked off of that to make the cassette. So I'm sure they could work off of that to make it digital, but I have not done that.
I'm dying to hear it. And, you know, that I think we realize that we probably don't get to give enough love on this podcast to the panhandle. Mm-hmm. And I would love to have that as an asset and to promote that area. And just because, I mean, Kathy's out there a whole lot more than I do. I kind of get stuck in Gainesville every time I travel around the state or St. Augustine. And, you know, that would be a great piece. And, you know, there's no reason why you couldn't go back and turn it into a book or something. You know, I always like to encourage people to do that.
Yeah. I mean, the panhandle definitely gets disregarded, especially the Western panhandle. You know, mm-hmm. Everybody knows Tallahassee. I don't even count that as the panhandle, but you start to talk about anything west of the Apalachicola River and you get very few people who who go there. I think even Rick, when I was in Port St. Joe, is that last week, 2 weeks ago? The whole summer is gone already. I'm getting my Halloween stuff out. It's very confusing. That was right on the time difference. And I think something happens when you switch time zones. It's like people don't count it as Florida for some reason. But as far as freshwater goes, there's some absolutely stellar springs. You know, there's one waterway I want to ask you about, Lars, and I won't be surprised if you haven't heard of it. And it's not really that far into the panhandle, but have you heard of the Wasissa or the Osceola Slave Canal?
Yeah. Yep. I paddled that. I don't do it on my tours, but I've paddled that. And it's a pretty nice area.
It's the only time I've been on a Florida river and I felt an actual dark sense of foreboding and did not want to finish the paddle.
Is that because of the history or just because of the environment?
The history, knowing the history, the environment's beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful now in 2024 when I paddled it. Beautiful with me, with my cell phone and my mosquito repellent and a hat and sunglasses and plenty of fresh water. But this is it's a canal that was dug by enslaved people that connected the Osceola and Wasissa rivers for the purpose of transportation. And I don't know exactly how long it is, but just saying that, and once you're out there, because it's so wild and so beautiful, and you can still on the paddle see the limestone rock that was used to kind of create this canal, and you start to picture what it was like, because this wasn't like they put these guys in a work truck,
right,
and took them home. There was no way for them to get back. So these men, I assume it was all enslaved Black men, had to work out in some very bitter conditions to dig this canal. And so, you know, I'm not a particularly mystical person, but it wasn't snakes, it wasn't gators. I'm not really terribly concerned about those things. I think you know me well enough to know that, Rick. It was something else I didn't want to finish. I just didn't want to do it. I felt like it was somehow disrespectful. To keep going, to enjoy it, to have this wonderful leisurely paddle on something that, you know, I don't know, but I could almost guarantee you somebody probably died working on it. You know, I can't imagine, if not out in the water from malaria, from dysentery, from something. But it is absolutely beautiful. And the Osceola River and the Wasissa are also beautiful rivers. I mean, we don't talk about anything in that area of the state as a people. It's almost like even the historians and writers are separate. I mean, can you name somebody other than Lars that you know who's written about that area of the state in a book?
Oh, I don't know. I think
you didn't know there was going to be a quiz this morning. Rick,
no, I think it's unlikely that somebody hasn't written about it, but it shows my ignorance of that area, honestly. So, I would love to spend more time there. I think some of the prettiest springs in the state are in that area. You know, I think Pensacola has a history that's probably almost as interesting as St. Augustine's, and it just doesn't, in this part of the state, you don't hear about it as much. It doesn't get the publicity. So, I'd love to learn more, honestly.
I know there's some of those nice riders up in Tallahassee area, you know, Susan Cerulean and some of those. I bet they've probably covered some of that stuff.
That's true. You know, there's another one that reminds me of, the Hollover Canal. Have you heard about that one on the Space Coast? It was dug also originally with enslaved labor in 1852.
Yeah. Another really heavy site is Port Mosey. If you've ever paddled over there by St. Augustine, you can kind of see that there's a land-based park now, but when we first started doing these tours in the 90s, you know, there was nothing on land, just this island that had only fairly recently been sort of identified as being where Fort Mosey was, but that was the first free Black settlement in North America. And you paddle this thing, this little island, when you know the story, you just sit there and you can feel it. It's just the gravity is just pulling you into that island. And it's just heavy. And you know, when I'm telling the story, sitting there, I'm always, you know, in the habit of saying Native, you know, African Americans, but they weren't. These were Africans, literally, who started Africa, whatever, as slaves, and finally through this contorted story through the Carolinas and just awful stories, wound up there and we're probably really grateful for it. And it's just this, you know, hot little tiny island in the intercoastal waterway north of St. Augustine. It's just, you can just feel it. It's really heavy.
You know, some of that though, Lars, I think is one of the best ways to teach history too.
Absolutely.
I mean, I used to be a kayak guide on the Gulf Coast, and it's one thing to put people in a history classroom or even listen to a podcast or watch a TV show, but you put them on the water and you explain things to them, and it's so much more real. I know the tours I used to guide dealt with the last remaining tidal estuary on Boca Ciega Bay, which is near Tampa Bay. And you talked about the history of the area and how things were different. And, you know, even from an environmental standpoint, because we would talk about development, essentially, and then also our drug running culture, which we had a lot here. And it's really, people enjoyed hearing about how the boats could slip into the mangroves and evade being seen and capture, because, you know, there's places you can get in a little boat that you cannot get in a big Coast Guard cutter. So that's more recent history. But I think it's a great way to teach history. And I think, you know, don't misunderstand, books are wonderful. I write books, you've written books, Rick has books. We're big book people here, but it is really great when you can have that experiential learning.
Yeah, one of the challenges I see today is just to get people, you know, out of their little air conditioned. I mean, now is not a good time to talk about this because none of us want to leave our little air conditioned places. But, you know, how do you get people off the couch and do that? I mean, because I agree, there, it is a magical experience when you paddle a Florida waterway, when you experience nature firsthand. It is different than, you know, watching a documentary or reading about it. You know, it's just a different level. How do you get people to do that? Anyone, yeah. Either one of you, take it.
Yeah. You know, it's a tough call.
You know, it's hard. I have friends who love to paddle and they won't do it after a certain point of the year. They just won't do it in the summer. You know, it's, they have to want to do it. You cannot take someone who just doesn't like nature, and it doesn't matter what time of the year it is, you're not going to get them in a kayak. It's a hard sell. But some of the kayak tours I've led have been school groups that didn't have a choice. So, you know, that type of captivity, especially when I'm leading the tour, because I don't tend to censor myself. So the school groups enjoy that.
You don't have a censor button. I don't.
I don't. I fought it for a long time. I just lean into it now.
That's good. You know,
well, I mean, if I choose my words carefully. So it's not like I swear to swear, but it's when I feel strongly about something, you know, when I say something was a bullshit idea. You know, the teachers kind of would look at me, but the kids were into it. Like, okay, so they'll remember that.
Yeah, exactly. They'll listen to you now.
Like, oh, I wonder if she'll say the F word. Yes. Yes, I will.
They've got a little scorecard, you know.
Bingo.
Bingo.
I'm going to have to start using that in my tours now. Celestial method, drop an F bomb to get the kids listening. I love it.
Lars, you do a lot of school groups, a lot of kids?
Yeah, do a lot of school groups and all kinds of groups, all ages really. But and that, it's nice, some of the school districts like up here at Fort White by Itchitutney and Marion County by Silver, they're starting to incorporate the nearby river into their curriculum, which is fantastic. Like Fort White School has these this program basically where just every subject they work in the Itchitutney River as part of their learning lessons of that. And I just think that's fantastic and hopefully a model much more, many more communities will be embracing, really.
I spoke when my first book came out at the high school, Mary Lee set it up for me. And I was just blown away by the level of interest in the high schoolers had. And honestly, it's such a memorable event because afterwards the kids wouldn't leave. They just had all these questions for me. They treated me like I was a rock star or something. And it was like, you know, it's one of those things that gives you faith in the next generation that they you know, they really care. And, you know, the things that interested them the most was the spiritual nature of water. And I had, I was doing a series of talks with Margaret Tolbert about myth and magic. And that's what they were, you know, they, you know, all the connections that throughout human history of spirituality and water was the thing that fascinated them the most. And it gave me, you know, a lot of faith in humanity, especially our young people.
I think the key to saving Florida is about 20 years away. And I think the key is what we're talking about here is when kids are young, find a way to get them outside and experience these things, make it a part of their growing up experience. You know, people talk about, I remember I was a kid, we would catch lightning bugs and do all this. And, you know, I want to hear people in 20 years go, I remember when I was a kid, we went out paddling with this crusty old guy and he took us out and talked about this. And I remember when I was a kid, we went to Devil's Millhopper and they told us about how it was a thin place between heaven and hell and the devil would come up and get people. And I mean, I think that if we really can tell these stories well and get kids used to hearing these types of stories when they're outside in Florida, they're going to feel far more connected to the land and be better stewards of it.
Lars, are there places that you take school groups that seem to resonate with the kids the most?
The ones with the better stories and the more, you know, interesting stories, obviously, just always kind of grabs people more, some kids and adults alike. You know, Akalaha just has some incredible stories and, you know, a lot of drama and, you know, intrigue, murders, the whole thing, which sadly, you know, the kids love to hear those kind of some of the worst, some of the uglier stories in a way, but in some ways they intrigue people too, you know, like early serial killer, basically a Timucua Indian serial killer that, yeah, it's a grim story, but it gives it place, you know, it's suddenly this place, this river has this story to it, and talk about steamboats and the families that lived in this one spot that we stop in and were killed by some of the Indians. And, you know, just giving these kind of stories really helps connect people to a place they can look around and so it has some context, something broader than what they might have been brought up hearing in storybooks and children's books, where forests are always given this kind of foreboding, scary place, you know. So we're kind of trying to overcome that and give them, although I guess murder stories don't help that very much. But you know, just giving them, you know, some context of these forests, that they're not just these, you know, black forests where evil spirits live, you know, just giving it some nice, some life. And that's where the wildlife comes in, you know, when you give the stories about the plants and animals and, you know, the interaction of the animals and, you know, that's a mother and that's a baby there. And, you know, just kind of bringing life to it, I think really helps the kids see it in a better, healthier way.
And I think it helps too that in conventional storytelling, Florida forests have been pretty much left out of the canon. I mean, if you think about all the serial killer movies and the things, you know, mountains are there, these northern forests are there, but you take kids through, say, the pine flatlands, or you take them through somewhere where it's, you know, all saw palmetto and pine, it doesn't feel as scary because that's not, you know, it's hard to make a Florida forest scary, especially. Yeah. You know, some of the northern forests, yeah, but it doesn't fit the trope of the scary, dark, foreboding forest. So I think that helps too. I don't find Florida forests scary.
I think, but the other opposite side of that is the swamps, which are, you know, alligator Alcatraz. You know, the alligators are going to get you. The pythons are going to get you. The water moccasins are going to give you. You know, they.
Okay.
You know, that's where they do that.
We got a default, and I want to say, as much as I've been in the Everglades, I've never seen a damn python. The alligators want absolutely nothing to do with you because they haven't been acculturated to people. And I did almost step on a water moccasin and nothing happened. I didn't step on it. It didn't attack me.
Almost.
It was a moment where I, you know, I'll be honest, I didn't look up from the ground for the next 90 minutes, but I, you know, I think we oversell that. And that's, it's so frustrating to me because, you know, I had a dream last night that an alligator came out of the water, and it wasn't me, it was a person sitting next to me, and jumped onto the person's lap and tried to cuddle. That is how I see alligators.
That's our t-shirt for this week. Cuddle gator.
They're just swamp puppies. Yeah. They're fine. I mean, I just... In a couple of weeks, we have somebody who's written a book about gators coming on the podcast, and I cannot wait to talk about why they are far less dangerous than, say, cows or, you know, dolphin, things like that. I'm really excited about that. I'm a big pro gator person.
Absolutely. Good, good. I know they're a tough sell. People always ask, are the gators out there? Then I have to go in the whole spiel about you don't need to worry about the alligators, really. You avoid them, but.
I'm like, you need to worry more about white men than you do the gators in the swamp. I promise you.
Yeah.
Sorry, no disrespect, but statistically speaking, it's going to be a white serial killer who comes for you, not a gator.
Exactly.
So can we go back to the Akawa? Somebody reached out to me when I did a tour once with Captain Karen Chadwick, and she took me to this house that was, I think it was a drawdown. It was the house, and the guy who lived there was Dr. Strange. And
yeah, somebody, Strange house.
Somebody had reached out to me via Facebook and wanted to know more about that. And I said, just reach out to Captain Karen. She'll tell you. Do you know anything about the Strange house?
Not much. He was a doctor in the area. I've had some customers of mine who he was their doctor. Yeah, I don't really know much about his story.
It's a really cool place. And, you know, I'm hoping there's going to be a drawdown, you know, this winter so we can, I love the idea of us taking groups out there and, you know, really taking advantage of the drawdown. You know, that's so frustrating. We seem like we got so close on the Akawaha this year, and maybe that, you know, there's a tipping point, and maybe if we get enough people out there this winter, we can achieve that tipping point, and then we can make a huge difference. And, you know, so many things, and, you know, the health of the manatee, the help of all the fish that live there. Lars, you do a lot of tour groups on the Akawaha?
Yeah. Yep. I do. I was out there three days ago. Do a lot of Akawaha paddles. And then when they do the drawdown, do a lot of paddles during the drawdown through the drawn down reservoir. I do two different sections of that, including the one you're talking about with the Strange house. It's definitely a really good learning experience to learn about the Akawaha itself and the whole dam reservoir issue. And it's a fantastic.
Was that intentional, the dam reservoir?
No, it wasn't.
That was beautiful. It was a beautiful turn of phrase.
I heard it come out of my mouth, but it was intentional. I'll actually claim it.
So where do you start your tours from? Where would you launch?
For the drawdown, I launch at Eureka, which takes us down past Cannon Spring and Strange House and all that. And then we end at Cypress Bayou, which historically was Payne's Landing. So as a Florida history writer yourself, you probably remember Payne's Landing. You've got a much better story than Cypress Bayou with that name. But anyway, so we end there for that tour. And then we also, sometimes we'll go from there down to Orange Spring, but much more typically we do a section of the lower reservoir launching at Kenwood, and then paddle out around through the big ghost forest, basically, of the big stumps, the big stump forest, which is very interesting, very eerie, but you get this sense of this forest frozen in time because these trunks all died off at this 8-10 foot high level, which is now the water level when the reservoir is full. You know, everything above the water level died and decayed, but the water is preserved at that height. So they draw it down and you got this forest of 8-10 foot stumps, and they're all kind of contorted in their normal natural way in the forest. So you can just kind of block off that top of those trees and imagine all these trees standing there and get a sense of the forest that was lost when that reservoir was created. And that one takes us past the largest spring that's been drawn, you know, it's been covered up by the reservoir. There's 20 altogether, but that's the largest one. That was another blue spring. But even during the drawdown, the lower end of the reservoir, they don't draw it down absolutely completely. And so there's still water standing in the lower reservoir a bit and just enough to really cover that spring. You see the boil of it. We paddle over, you can see the boil, but it doesn't clear out like Cannon Spring does in the upper reservoir. So those are the two main tours I do during the drawdowns.
How can people take one of your tours?
They can just contact us. It's, you know, email me riverguide2000@yahoo.com. They can look at our website calendar, although it's just now need to be updated because I have like 4 or 5 variables coming up that I need to get dates on before I plug in my dates. But anyway, but adventureoutpost.net if they look at the calendar link on that website, they can see that. And then Facebook. I'm not real active posting pictures of our tours, but once in a while, and people will post their pictures of our tours on there. So those are the best ways to contact us.
Fantastic. Well, we'll definitely put links to both of those things in the show notes.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
No, thank you for coming on. You're welcome to come back anytime. We would love to hear more, talk more water stuff, and maybe one day we could arrange a podcast meetup on one of these rivers. That'd be great.
That'd be great. We should do a drawdown paddle over.
We've been talking. We definitely want to do that.
Have you heard anything about might happen?
I haven't. These last two winters, both winters, it was scheduled and got canceled for different reasons. A flood event kind of happened before one of them. And so it's been put off a couple of years now. I feel really certain it's going to happen this coming winter, but I have not heard anything at all that it is. That's just my good guess. But as far as dates of when that would happen, probably October, November, in that ballpark.
I'm getting excited for it, honestly.
It's a big help for the Ocklawaha removing the dam reservoir. There, I did it again. The whole effort to remove that. I think those drawdowns bring so much attention in there during those times that it really seems to give a little bump to that whole effort. And Margaret Tolbert's movie documentary thing that she did, The Lost Springs, really helped bring that story, that issue out of the region much more than anything else has in the past. Because I get a lot of feedback from people from farther away in Florida and elsewhere, and I can just sense it in the people that I talk to and everything, that especially that documentary and internet too. There's a lot of information tends to spread further and faster with the internet, but those kind of things are really getting it. It's been such a local issue for so many years. Palatka, Gainesville, it's been this kind of local battle, but with the internet and with Margaret's documentary and her work and other people's work, it just seems to be getting a broader reach, which is fantastic. And so I'm looking forward to the next drawdown too, and help really get the word out some more.
Real quick then, before we go, we do want to thank our listeners who support us. For as little as $3 a month, you too can support the Florida Spectacular podcast. John Bowne, Michael Gargulak, Natalie Zacharick, Angela Connolly, Davita Breyer, Leslie Hallweg, Carol Miller, Bet's Boy Adventure, Brian Woodall, Brad Sager, Elise Smith, Stephanie Hewley, Ryan Worthington, and Craig and Celeste Welch. Thank you all for supporting us. Thank everybody for listening, and we will see you next time on the Florida Spectacular.